So thank you all so much for coming this evening. It's like being with friends. And well, Vrindavan is a very spontaneous place. And Vrindavan is not such an organized place. So this evening, I thought we could also be a little bit spontaneous. We'll obviously do some singing, and we'll discuss a little bit. Maybe at some points I'll open it up to you and ask you if you have any questions, comments, or any thoughts that you would like to share. And yeah, I hope this evening, in this last day of Kartik, we can really absorb ourselves and make the most of it. This culture of coming together in the evenings and remembering Krishna and remembering Krishna's activities is something which is very much a part of spiritual culture. India is also known as Bharat, you may have heard. Bha stands for Bhava, which means emotion. Ra stands for Raga, which means melody. And Ta stands for Tal, which means beat. And so Bharat, or India, spiritual India, is literally the place where spiritual emotion is expressed through melodies, beats, singing, dancing, and an outpouring of the heart in a very natural way. So please do sing. Will you sing if I sing first? That didn't sound very loud. Will you sing?
Yes!
So please do sing with your hearts. Let's try to forget about everything in the world and enter into a different space. Today is the final day of Kartik 2021. And we're trying to make the most of it this evening here. It said that Vrindavan manifests itself in many, many different ways, in many, many different places. Vrindavan manifests itself in this world. Vrindavan is eternally in another space. And Vrindavan is ultimately within our own hearts. And this year we've had Vrindavan here in this room. And so it's a very special opportunity this evening, because this manifestation of Vrindavan we may not be able to experience for many more days. So we're trying to make the most of it. And we're trying to take a few last lessons to take away with us as we come to the end of this Kartik and come to the end of this parikrama that all of you have been on. And sometimes the final lessons are the most powerful lessons. I'll share with you one day what happened to me on one particular trip on the day I was leaving Vrindavan. When I leave Vrindavan, then generally I'm taking the very early morning flight out of Delhi. And so taking an early morning flight out of Delhi means taking a taxi from Vrindavan at about midnight. So I was up in my room at about 10 p.m. that evening, and I knew I was going to leave Vrindavan, and it's always a heart-wrenching moment. Because you think, will I make it back? Will I ever be able to come back here again? And in those last few hours in Vrindavan before you leave, you're trying to meditate very deeply on the lessons, on the insights that Krishna has lent you in that time and what you're going to take away with you. So it was 10 p.m., I was in my room and I was intensely writing, reflecting, and searching deep within as to what I needed to take away from Vrindavan with me. And then at about 10:30, there was a knock on the door. And I thought, you know, Indian taxi drivers are never 1.5 hours early. So I opened the door And lo and behold, it was this South Indian cook. And you know, he had the belly to go with it. I'd been staying in this ashram and I saw this South Indian cook every single day. And you know what? I never paid much attention to him. Every time I saw him, he was always going to cook something. And in my mind, I saw him busily running around cooking, you know, with his South Indian transcendental pot belly. And I thought, in my mind, I guess I was a little bit critical because I was thinking, this is Vrindavan, this is the place of austerity, this is the place where you minimize eating and all of these things and you just engage in spiritual practice. So I never paid so much attention to him. So lo and behold, at 10:30, he knocks on my door. So as soon as I open the door, there's no greeting, nothing. He says, I want to feed you. So in my mind, I'm thinking, these are my last couple of hours in Vrindavan, you know, like, I'm going to like eat now. I don't want to eat. I just want to reflect. I want to go deep. I want to learn the lessons. I want to internalize. And he said, I've been waiting all week to feed you. Please. And then he bowed down. He bowed down in front of me and he said, please, I'm begging you, I want to feed you. So I mean, there was not much choice there. So I walked with him. And as I walked with him, he took me to the back of the ashram. And as he took me to the back of the ashram, I saw he had built a makeshift kitchen there. And there was a huge pot of khichdi, enough to feed like 300 people. So I said, I can't eat that much. I said, why have you cooked this much? And then he began telling me his story. He said, I was a corporate banker in Delhi. I had 5 properties. I had all of these things, successful in so many ways. He said, but at one point, I gave it all up. And I decided that what I'm going to do for the rest of my life is just come to Vrindavan, stay here, and just cook for all the sadhus, all the saintly people. And so every day, 3 times a day, in my makeshift kitchen, I cook, and then I go to feed all the saintly people. And that's why I knocked on your door. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm such an imposter. And then he looked at me and he said, you know, I am not a sadhu. I'm not a sadhu. But I know that if I serve the sadhus, if I serve the saintly people, then I will become a sadhu. So you please let me serve you. So like my hard heart was melting. And so he sat me down, he put the plate, put a lemon, ginger, it was like the whole works. It was spicy as well, but with a lot of love. And then, you know, he served me. And you know, it's like in India when they serve you, you sit there and then they sit right in front of you, like watching. It was like, it's very loving, but it's a bit intense as well. It was very loving and he just, and then he wanted to fan me as well. I'm like, the fan is too much. Like, come on, like, the fan is too much. And I sat there eating. And I must have sat there for whatever it was, 15, 20 minutes. And you know, in that time, all he said to me, he said, you just please pray for me that I can just serve others for the rest of my life. I have no other desire. I'm not saintly like you. I don't know the scriptures like you. But please, you bless me that I can just serve others. And so like that, that was the only desire that he expressed to me in that time. And then I got up and I went back to my room and I realized, yeah, Krishna gave me the final lesson. The final lesson of Vrindavan Dham is that ultimately one has to become a servant of others. One has to put one's own desires, one's own selfishness to one side And when one manifests their true nature as a servant, then actually they experience the most profound levels of spiritual connection with Krishna. So it was a very, very profound lesson. And today I was thinking, what will we discuss? There's so much to discuss about Vrindavan. So then I thought, three things for me in Vrindavan are super important. When I think of Vrindavan, these three things are what immediately come to my mind. The first thing that comes to my mind when I think of Vrindavan is Srila Prabhupada. Because Srila Prabhupada's home was Vrindavan. But not just that, Srila Prabhupada was the ambassador of Vrindavan. Srila Prabhupada was the one who traveled everywhere and opened the doors so that anyone could come to Vrindavan. And so, even when we go to Vrindavan today and you drive to the Krishna Balaram temple, then there's a gate on the road and it's called the Prabhupada Gate. And you can't get to the temple unless you go through the Prabhupada Gate. And it's very nice because it helps us to remember that we would have never reached Vrindavan if it wasn't for Srila Prabhupada. One time when I was going to Vrindavan, I called His Holiness Sachinanda Maharaj the day before. And I asked Maharaj, how should I do parikrama? How should I take advantage of Vrindavan? And the first thing he said to me is that when you reach Vrindavan, before you go anywhere, first go to the samadhi, the tomb of Srila Prabhupada, where he's eternally remembered and worshipped and honored, and take his blessings. So the first thing that comes to mind when I think of Vrindavan is Srila Prabhupada. The second thing that comes to mind when I think of Vrindavan are the Goswamis of Vrindavan. Because the Goswamis were the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu who revealed Vrindavan to the world after it had been lost and covered for many, many hundreds and thousands of years. And so the Goswamis lived there as mendicants. And for me, the Goswamis of Vrindavan became my role models in life. Because they had this incredible personality whereby they were so bold, but so humble at the same time. They were so deep in their own spiritual practice, but they were so human and down to earth in their dealings with others. They were so rooted in scripture and their own spiritual practices, but they were constantly meditating on how to reach out and help others. And so they had these amazing aspects to these personality which just captured my imagination. So the Goswamis, for me, are inseparable from Vrindavan. And of course, when I think of Vrindavan, I think of Krishna, but Krishna specifically in his very, very charming personality. Srila Prabhupada's godbrother, OBL Kapoor, he writes very, very beautifully. He says, in Vrindavan, Krishna is more human than superhuman. He's more natural than supernatural. In Vrindavan, Krishna loves his devotees as much as they love him. Krishna seeks his devotees as much as they seek him. And Krishna needs his devotees as much as they need him. And so this very beautiful, charming, natural outpouring of enchanting character of Krishna is what comes to my mind. So today I was thinking, what will I talk about that will encompass Srila Prabhupada, the Goswamis of Vrindavan, and Krishna's charming character? And last night I got the inspiration of what I should try to share with you today. And I'll try to take you to that one place which I think encompasses all three of these things in a very, very beautiful way. But before we do that, we have to enter Vrindavan. And we're going to sing a beautiful song. By the way, this is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to Vrindavan himself. And as we know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna, and when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went as Krishna, come in the form of a devotee, when he went to Vrindavan, then it was a very, very transcendental time. All the animals recognized him, and Vrindavan was floating in ecstasy. And so we're going to sing this very, very beautiful song. This is a traditional song from Bangladesh. And this song is describing how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu enters into Vrindavan for his parikrama. So what we're going to do is we're going to sing it line by line. And I'm going to try and take you through some of the words and what it means. And Ian Prabhu is going to sing. And please, all of you, respond. So here we have the beautiful words. Dhule dhule Gaura Chand, Hari Guna Gai. Dhule dhule means swaying and swaying. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was swaying and swaying. He was intoxicated, he was enchanted as he was approaching Vrindavan. And as he was approaching Vrindavan, what was he doing? Hari Guna Gai. He was just chanting Hari's names. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had tried many, many times to go to Vrindavan, but he had failed. Some of us may feel, I'm trying so much to go to Vrindavan, but it's not working out. But one day it will work out. And when we go, if we can go like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu goes, swaying and swaying, chanting Krishna's names, Nache Gaura Roy, he's dancing as he enters this transcendental abode, which is the cherished destination of all souls.
Dhule dhule Gaura Chand, Hari Guna Dhule dhule Gaura Chand, Hari Guna Gai. Asiya Vrindavane,
Asiya Vrindavane,
Asiya Vrindavane,
Asiya Vrindavane,
Nache Gaura Nache Gaura Ram,
Nache Gaura
Ram. So Mahaprabhu enters into Vrindavan, and as Mahaprabhu enters into Vrindavan, then he sees that everywhere he looks, everyone is doing what? Preme Koi Hari Katha. The trees are singing about Krishna. The birds are singing about Krishna. All the different animals of Braj, Harinam Ashonai, they're all singing Krishna's names and remembering his activities. And he sees that the whole of Vrindavan is absorbed in Krishna. There are no other thoughts. Everything else has become insignificant. And the real characteristic, Tannama Rupa Charitadi Sukirtananu Shmityo Kramena Rasana Manasi Niyoja, that their minds have become absorbed in the name, fame, form, qualities and pastimes of Krishna. And in this way, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has entered Vrindavan and is soaking up the atmosphere.
Vrindavan Tayo Lata Preme Koi Hare Tata Hare Nam Sona
Hare Nam Sona
Hare Nam Sona
Hare Nam
Sona Dure 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 Hare Gona
As Gauranga enters into Vrindavan, then he sees the whole atmosphere is pervaded by all of this remembrance of Krishna. So then what Gauranga decides to do, Bole Hari Hari, he goes up to one of the trees and he says, Hari Hari, Hari Hari,
Hari Hari,
Hari Hari. And what does the tree say back? Hari Hari,
Hari Hari.
And like this, Mukhe Mukhe Sukha Sari. Sukha means a parrot. So then Mahaprabhu, after going to the tree, he goes up to a parrot and he says, Hari Hari and Hari Naam Agai. And like this, he's simply communicating with all the residents of Braj through the words Hari Hari. And indeed, Krishna in Vrindavan is known as Hari because Vrindavan Krishna does something very, very special, very, very dangerous, very, very wonderful. Krishna's Hari begins to take everything away from you. So be careful. Krishna in Vrindavan goes with a warning. Krishna steals the butter. Braje prashidam navanita chodam. Krishna steals butter. Krishna steals the clothes of the gopis. Krishna steals all of your sins that have been accumulated for many, many lifetimes. But you know what? Krishna will also steal your mind. And Krishna will steal your heart. So as Mahaprabhu is telling everyone, Hari Hari, remember, Krishna is Hari. He's a thief. You'll take everything away.
Gora bole hare hare, Shari bole hare hare.
Gora bole hare hare, Shari bole hare hare. Hare Nam Gai,
Hare Nam Gai,
Hare Nam
Gai, Hare Nam Gai,
Hare Krishna,
has entered Vrindavan. And he's begun speaking to all the residents of Vrindavan. So now he's observed them. Now he's spoken to them. Now, because he's spoken to them, he's understanding their heart. That, my God, everyone here is so absorbed in Krishna. They're so absorbed in me. I want to be just like them. And in this ecstasy of observing Vrindavan and everything going on there, Hari Nama Mate Hoye, Mahaprabhu becomes completely intoxicated. So this is the goal of spiritual life. The goal of spiritual life is not to know about Krishna. The goal of spiritual life is not to have faith in Krishna. The goal of spiritual life is not even just to surrender to Krishna, but the goal of spiritual life is to become mad after Krishna. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu becomes so mad, Mayur Mayuri Preme, he's looking at the love of all the swans and the different living entities there, Nachiya Kelai, and as he dances, he falls on the ground, and he's rolling in the dust of Braj, completely mad, completely intoxicated, and basically Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has lost his mind.
Hari Name Mata Hoye, Hari Nase Chede,
Hari Name Mata
Hoye, Hari Name Mata Hoye, Hari Nase Chede,
Hari Name Mata Hoye.
Mayuru Mayuri Preme,
Mayuru
Mayuri Preme,
Nachiya
Kela, Nachiya Kela,
Nachiya Kela.
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continues his Parikrama Vrindavan. Parikrama Vrindavan is very, very special because Prane Hari Dhyane Hari. Through Parikrama, Krishna becomes installed in your life here. He becomes installed in your mind. He becomes installed in your heart such that one will never forget Krishna. And so as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is going around chanting Hari Bolo Badana Bhori, Krishna has come into his pran, his life, and his dhyan, his meditation. And as he chants Hari Nam Ageya Geya from place to place. In Vrindavan, there are so many places, there are so many trees. And underneath every tree in Vrindavan, Krishna performed a different pastime. So as Mahaprabhu is going tree to tree, Rase Gale Jai, then he's experiencing a different rasa, a different taste. Because Krishna is Rasa Raj, Krishna is Rasa Nath, Krishna is Rasika Shekhar, Krishna is Rasa Bihari, Krishna is Raso Vesaha, Krishna is the Akila Rasamrita Murti, Krishna is full of rasa. You will never become satiated hearing and singing about Krishna because he is the very reservoir of all rasa.
Prane Hari Dane Hari Hari Bolo Bada Gori
Prane Hari Dane Hari Hari Bolo Bada Gori
Vrindavan is full of many, many treasures. But it's said that of the treasures in Vrindavan, Govardhan Giriraj, the great mountain, the king of mountains, is one great treasure. Another treasure of Vrindavan is the dust that Krishna himself put in his mouth. And the other treasure of Vrindavan is the Yamuna River. So as Mahaprabhu is walking, just like Krishna is Yamuna Tira Vanachari, he's always walking along the Yamuna. If you go to Vrindavan today, you can walk right beside the Yamuna. And this stretch of Vrindavan is known as the Cowherd Boys Trail. And here, Krishna and all the cowherd boys would run right beside the Yamuna. So when Mahaprabhu came and he came to the Yamuna, then as the Yamuna saw Mahaprabhu, Yamuna immediately understood that this is Krishna. He has come in a concealed form. Yamuna uthole eshe charana dhoyai. And immediately, what did the Yamuna do? She began rising and rising and rising and overflowing. And why did the Yamuna want to overflow? Because she wanted to break the banks and touch Mahaprabhu's lotus feet, charana dhoyai. And so as Mahaprabhu was walking, everyone was observing and the Yamuna was overflowing. So when we are picturing in our mind the Yamuna overflowing, then we are praying that in the same way our love will overflow from our hearts and reach Krishna, so that we can be in contact with Krishna's lotus feet.
Asiya Yamuna Kule Nache Hari Hari Kule
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 Yamuna udole she,
Yamuna udole she,
Yamuna udole she,
Yamuna udole she,
Charana doya,
Charana doya,
Charana doya.
Hare Krishna,
Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu ke So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the first to show us parikrama. Parikrama is very, very powerful. And when Krishna came to this world as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he did it to show that everyone should do this. You see, parikrama is something like a spider weaving its web. Have you seen a spider weave its web? It goes round once, then it goes round again, then it goes round again and again and again. And in this way, the web becomes very, very strong. So in the same way, it's said that when one does parikrama, either physically or parikrama in the mind, by doing that circumambulation of all of Krishna's holy places, then one begins to weave a transcendental web of consciousness. And the more you do it, the more times you do it, the more circles you do, then that strong web becomes even more tighter, and it encases one's consciousness, and one becomes very, very much fixed in remembrance of Krishna. And that's why we do parikrama. And once is just once. Then it has to be done a second, third, fourth, fifth, an unlimited number of times, because it's like weaving that web of consciousness. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to Vrindavan, but then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left after 2 months. And then what happened 1 year later is that his followers, the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, came. Here you can see on the wall on the left-hand side, there is a picture of the six Goswamis. On the final poster on the right, you can see the six personalities. So Mahaprabhu told them to come to Vrindavan because Mahaprabhu wanted them to make Vrindavan the epicenter of spiritual rejuvenation again. He wanted them to establish temples in Vrindavan, and he wanted them to excavate all the places where Krishna performed his pastimes, and ensure that the whole world for generations to come would know about Vrindavan and would come and visit Vrindavan. So when the Goswamis came to Vrindavan, they lived in different places. But this area of Vrindavan, which you're seeing on the screen, this is a very, very special place of Vrindavan where the Goswamis were living. This area of Vrindavan is known as Seva Kunj. What you see here is a forest or a green area which is encircled by a border wall, and this is known as Seva Kunj today. However, the original Seva Kunj of Vrindavan is much bigger than this area. For those of you who have been to Vrindavan, Seva Kunj actually spans from Kaliya Ghat, the place where Krishna jumped into the Yamuna to subdue the Kaliya demon. So from that place all the way to Vamshi Vat. For those of you who have been to Vrindavan, Vamshi Vat is a beautiful tree, and under this tree, Karshan Venu Svaner Gopi, Krishna would play his flute. And as soon as he would play his flute, all the gopis would run to come and associate with him. So Seva Kunj spans that whole place. But today we know of Seva Kunj as specifically this area. And here the Goswamis lived in Seva Kunj. They lived under a different tree every single day. They ate whatever was available. They slept very, very little, and all of their time and energy was absorbed in worshipping Krishna, hearing about Krishna, writing about Krishna, and speaking to others about Krishna. Krishna kirtana gana nartana paro premamritam bho nidhi. They were walking around just Krishna, Krishna all day, and they were madly absorbed in Krishna. Now this place is known as Seva Kunj, and one may question, why did the Goswamis pick Seva Kunj to stay in? Because Seva Kunj is a very, very special place. This here is one of the most incredible pictures of Krishna painted by one of Srila Prabhupada's disciples, Yadurani Mataji. And this picture, in essence, is telling the story of Seva Kunj. Seva means service, and Kunja means a forest. So Seva Kunj means the forest of service. The whole world is meant to be serving Krishna. But in Seva Kunj, Krishna serves Srimati Radharani. In Seva Kunj, Krishna becomes bound by the love of Srimati Radharani. Because Krishna has his dance of love with the gopis and Srimati Radharani. And when at a certain point Srimati Radharani becomes transcendentally angry and proud, then she leaves and she comes to the area of Seva Kunj, and Krishna quickly pursues her, and in order to pacify her anger, he begins to serve her and coax her and submit himself before her in a very humble mood in order to again win back her favor. And so Seva Kunj represents the place where Krishna is bound by the love of Srimati Radharani. We're in the month of Damodar, and we generally think of Damodar as Krishna who was bound by Mother Yashoda. But Krishna was also bound by Srimati Radharani's love. While Krishna was bound by Mother Yashoda's love in Gokul, Mahavan, Brihatvan, in Seva Kunj, Vrindavan, in that place, Krishna was bound by the love of Srimati Radharani. And this place, Seva Kunj, is very, very significant because it shows that in Vrindavan, even the Bhagavad Gita goes out of the window. Right? Everything that you learn on Gita life, everything that you read in the Bhagavad Gita comes into question in Vrindavan. Because you know what? In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Ye yathamam prabhadyante, tamstateva bhajami aham. As they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Not in Vrindavan. Because when Krishna is reunited with the gopis and he sees that the sacrifices that they've made to come and see him, then what does Krishna say to Radharani? Napareyeham niravadya samyujam. I cannot repay you, Srimati Radharani, in thousands of lifetimes. Krishna's words in the Bhagavad Gita are contradicted. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Vedaham samadittani vartamani charjana. I know past, present and future. I know all living entities, but me, nobody knows. So Krishna says, I know everything. But when Krishna is in Vrindavan, he realizes, I don't know everything. Because I don't even know the love that Srimati Radharani has for me. It's inconceivable to my mind. And therefore I have to come as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to try and experience that love. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Bhoktaram Yagyatapasham Sarva Loka Maheshwaram. I am the owner I am the overseer. I am the controller of all the lands. Not in Vrindavan. Because Krishna comes to Kusum Sarova and he sees that the gopis are picking flowers. And Krishna says, "Foul, how are you picking flowers? Did you get permission to pick flowers?" They said, "We're picking flowers to worship Surya Dev. We don't need permission." Krishna says, "I'm in charge of Vrindavan. You need my permission." The gopis look at Krishna and say, "You're in charge of, what did you ever do for Vrindavan? Did you ever plant one tree? Did you ever nourish Vrindavan? In fact, you and the cowherd boys run around Vrindavan and you mess up the whole place." And then the gopis look at Krishna and Krishna says, and they say, "Srimati Radharani is the queen of Vrindavan." In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, "Ishvara sarva bhutanam vidya se arjuna tisthati." I am controlling the wanderings of all living entities. Not in Vrindavan. Because in Vrindavan, Krishna's movements are controlled by his devotees. Therefore, Srimati Radharani can bind Krishna and stop his movement. And therefore, Mother Yashoda can bind Krishna, Srimati Radharani can bind Krishna. So, this is why Vrindavan is so transcendental. Because all philosophy, all tattva, all seeming perspectives of Krishna's godhood go out of the window, and rasa, relationship and love takes over, and love trumps everything. And so the Goswamis came to live in Seva Kunj. In Goloka Vrindavan, Goloka Vrindavan is said to be like a beautiful lotus flower. And right in the center, Vaikuntha is said to be like a lotus flower. And right in the center of that lotus flower is Goloka Vrindavan. So Goloka Vrindavan is the central place within the spiritual sky. But within Goloka Vrindavan, it's said that Seva Kunj is the central place within the forest of Vrindavan. And in the center of Seva Kunj is one place. And that's the place where I want to take you to today. Because that place, Srila Prabhupada said, is the hub of the wheel of the entire spiritual universe. Srila Prabhupada said, in this place, everything rotates around this place. And does anyone know, if Vaikuntha, the center of Vaikuntha is Goloka Vrindavan, if the center of Goloka Vrindavan is the forest of Vrindavan, if the center of the forest of Vrindavan is Seva Kunj, then what is right in the center of Seva Kunj? Radha Kunj? No?
Krishna?
Yes, Krishna is in every ounce of Vrindavan. The place which is considered to be the center of Seva Kunj is the Radha Damodar Temple. How many of you have been to the Radha Damodar Temple? Okay, not so many. This is a very, very profound place. The Radha Damodar Temple. Remember in the beginning I was telling you that for me Vrindavan signifies three things: Srila Prabhupada, the Goswamis and the sweetness of Krishna. At the Radha Damodar Temple, Srila Prabhupada's presence is so palpable. The Goswami's presence is so palpable. And the presence of Krishna as Damodar, bound by the love of Srimati Radharani, is so strong. And therefore Srila Prabhupada himself stayed in this temple for 6 years. And Srila Prabhupada said, this is the center of the entire spiritual creation. That's what he said. So this is the courtyard of the Radha Damodar Temple. And these are the beautiful deities of Radha Damodar. And in Vrindavan, you will find that there are many, many deities of Krishna, which were founded and worshipped by many, many of Krishna's great devotees. And so we're going to sing a little song which glorifies all of the different deities of Krishna in Vrindavan. And every deity of Vrindavan is having its own mood. One of the deities in Vrindavan is Gopinath. So Gopinath, one of Gopinath's specialities is that if you look at Gopinath, his flute is very, very long. Because Gopinath is known, as I mentioned, as the form of Krishna who plays the flute under the Vamshivat tree and calls all the gopis. Govinda ji is known for his smiling face, and therefore Rupa Goswami creates a prayer where he says, if you're at all interested in family, friendship, love, society, and affairs of the material world, then do not look at Govinda, who is standing on the bank of the Keshi Ghat in a threefold bending pose, throwing sidelong glances at his devotees. Because if your eyes meet his eyes, then you'll forget about everything in this world. Sanatan Goswami's deity is Madan Mohan. And Madan Mohan is the form of Krishna that conquers Cupid, the god of love, the god of lust. And therefore, devotees, when they go to Vrindavan, usually the first deity that they visit is the deity of Madan Mohan, because it's said that the pilgrim goes to Madan Mohan and prays that while I'm in Vrindavan, allow my mind to be free of all these desires, all these material attachments, so that I can fully concentrate on being absorbed in you. And so there are all these wonderful deities of Krishna that have their own moods. There's another form of Krishna known as Banke Bihari. And Banke Bihari is the form of Krishna that never wakes up early. So if you go to Banke Bihari temple, even today, there's no Mangalarti. So if you want to live in the temple but you struggle with Mangalarti, that's the place for you. There's only one day in the year at the Banke Bihari temple where they have Mangalarti, and you know what that day is, right? Janmashtami. Krishna has to wake up for Mangalarti. So these are all the beautiful deities, and this is a beautiful song. And in this song, you'll see, after naming the deities, there is the name of a great personality, and then it said, Pran Dana Hai. Pran means life, Dana means wealth. So when it names the personality, it's explaining that these deities are the wealth of their life, they're their life breath. They only live to serve these forms of Krishna. And so we'll sing this song together.
Bye. Thank you.
read Radha Damodara Jeev Goswami Brandana Hey. So these deities, of course, these are not the original deities of Radha Damodar, because later on there was an invasion of Vrindavan and the original deities of Radha Damodar were moved to Jaipur. So you can go there today to see Radha Damodar. But these deities in Vrindavan are said to be non-different. And Radha Damodar were the deities of Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami was the youngest of the Goswamis, and his guru was Rupa Goswami. Rupa Goswami was really a mastermind in so many ways. He was the greatest, a great philosopher, a great scholar. He was a great astrologer. He knew so many languages. He knew Bengali, Persian, Sanskrit, so many languages. He knew so many arts. He knew music, he knew poetic composition, and one other thing that he knew was how to sculpt. And therefore, with his own hands, he took his own hands and he molded a beautiful deity, which became known as Radha Damodar, and that deity was gifted to Jiva Goswami, and Jiva Goswami then worshipped that a beautiful form of Krishna with his heart. And so those deities are now here in this beautiful temple. And some years after the deities were gifted to Jiva Goswami, then by some famous Jaipur kings, the temple of Radha Damodar was built. And many other deities came there to be worshipped. And so these are the focal points of all the pilgrims who go to the Radha Damodar temple today. So before I carry on and speak more about the Radha Damodar temple and its significance, maybe I'll open it up and see whether any of you, maybe you have some question, maybe you have some reflection, maybe there's something about Vrindavan that is puzzling you or on your mind that you'd like to speak about, or you'd like more insight into. So perhaps we can have a discussion, and that kind of breaks the monologue of me speaking. So does anyone have any questions or anything they would like to ask about Vrindavan or anything that we've spoken about thus far? Yes.
Where was the very first Rasalila? Where did it happen, the very first one?
The Rasalila is known as Nitya Lila. So Rasalila is Nitya Lila, means this Lila is going on everywhere. It's going on in the spiritual world, it's going on somewhere in the material world, and it's constantly going on within the hearts of the Shuddha Bhaktas, the pure devotees. But in Vrindavan, there are many, many Rasa Leela places. There are many places called the Rasa Stali. So if you go to Vrindavan today, there are different places which are considered to be the Rasa Stali. But of all the places, I don't know of one that is considered the first place where Krishna did the first Rasa Leela. To my knowledge, I've not heard that being revealed, but we can say that there are many Rasa studies which are in Vrindavan today. Yeah. Yes.
Are there any examples where the deities actually started interacting with the Goswamis?
Yes, the deities are reciprocating according to one's devotion, according to one's genuine, heartfelt offerings. And therefore we see that the deities were, on many, many occasions, reciprocating. They came in dreams to their devotees. The deities in many instances were answering the questions of the Goswamis. And in many, many instances, the deities were also having loving quarrels with their devotees as well. Of course, we know the famous incidences of how Sanatan Goswami was worshipping Madan Mohan, and Sanatan Goswami as a renunciate had nothing. So what did he have to offer? His offerings to Madan Mohan were very, very simple. And if you go to Vrindavan today, then you go to the villages, then they'll give you something called Braja Roti. So it's not like the chapatis you get in the Haveli at the manor, nice with ghee and so many things. They're quite dry, stone-baked. And Sanatan Goswami was giving these dry rotis to chapatis to Madan Mohan. And finally, Madan Mohan broke his silence and said, at least some sugar, at least some salt, something, you know, it's too dry. And then Sanatan Goswami said, today you ask for salt, tomorrow you'll ask for sugar, and then you'll ask for sweet rice. And like this, they were having loving quarrels. So yes, the deity is reciprocating. If we treat Krishna as a stone, then Krishna will remain a stone. If we treat Krishna with aggression and violence, then Krishna will not reciprocate. He will stay silent. Sometimes people ask, how could the deities of Vrindavan be destroyed? If the deity is alive, if the deity is present, if the deity is actually Krishna, then how could people come and destroy the deity? Because Krishna in the form of a deity is not reciprocating with aggression. Krishna as the deity is not reciprocating with mechanistic worship. Krishna as the deity is reciprocating with love. And so when one approaches the deity with love, then Krishna becomes very, very active. But if one approaches Krishna in any other mood, then Krishna remains as a stone. So the form of the deity is there. But the Goswamis also revealed another truth to deity worship. Krishna appears as a deity for two reasons. The first reason that Krishna appears as a deity is so that the devotee can have the opportunity to render service in a very, very personal way. But the second, deeper, internal, esoteric reason why Krishna appears as a deity is because Krishna wants to experience what it feels like to be completely dependent on his devotee. Krishna wants to experience what it feels like to be completely in the hands of his devotee so that he can't eat, he can't dress, he can't do anything without the loving devotion of his servant there to facilitate all such things. And so Krishna wants to be completely dependent on his devotee. And so Krishna comes in that form to experience that dependence. And when he does, and a devotee fulfills that with great love, then Krishna becomes very, very active. Yes?
I believe Krishna complained to Prabhupada about the dirty plates that the devotee created. Is that right?
Krishna complained to
Prabhupada.
I didn't hear that story.
They had such a good relationship that they were communicating and he told, and Prabhupada addressed it with the devotees, and they were really embarrassed because it was true.
Okay.
You never heard that?
I've not heard that story.
Oh, well, you see.
Interesting. Yes, Nick.
In Nectar of Instruction, it signifies the importance of Radhakund being the most sacred of the entire universe creation. How do we understand this Radhakund temple? What vision do you see both of them?
Yeah. All places have their speciality. You see, let's look at the devotees of Krishna. We say Prahlad Maharaj is the Bhakta Shiromani, the crest jewel of all Vaishnavas. Who can be higher than Prahlad? But then we say Lord Shiva is Vaishnavanam Yathashambhu, the foremost Vaishnava. But then we also say that the gopis are unparalleled in their devotion to Krishna. So who is the highest? In one sense, they're all perfect. They're all the highest. And in the same way, when it comes to holy places, then we can say that from different points of view, each place has its speciality. Radha Kund in the Nectar of Instruction is outlined by Rupa Goswami to be the most sacred place in the entire universe, because Radha Kund represents the liquid form of Radharani's love for Krishna. Radharani's love for Krishna, as already mentioned, conquers all of the philosophical truth that Krishna gave, and therefore Radharani's love is inconceivable. It is said that Radharani's love is so contradictory, it's perfect but it's ever expanding, it's all pervading but it's ever expanding, contradiction. Radharani's love is completely pure but is full of seemingly crooked activities and emotions. So Radharani's love is considered to be the epitome of what pleases Krishna. She is the embodiment of Mahabhav. So prema is split into 9 stages, and Mahabhav is said to be the most intense type of love, and Srimati Radharani is the personification of that. And when she at Radha Kund, that love of Srimati Radharani is present in a liquid form, so what could be more sacred than that? So in that sense, Radha Kund is said to be the most sacred. But Radha Damodar temple is said to be the most sacred in the sense that the exchange between Radharani and Krishna in that place was also considered to be the most confidential type of exchange, where Krishna becomes completely submissive to Srimati Radharani, and he becomes completely conquered. And so, yes, in Vrindavan there is room for many places to be considered the most sacred. It's also said that Naimisharanya, where the Bhagavatam was spoken, it's also mentioned, that is also described as the hub of the spiritual world, because the Bhagavatam is the form of Krishna in the book in which all of this love is revealed. And so Naimisharanya, the place in which that love is revealed in its most ripe and mature form, is also considered the hub of the spiritual world. So in different places, different things happen which signify those places as very, very sacred. Is that okay? Yes.
Could you tell us why did Vrindavan grew its mercy and then grew
again forgotten? Firstly, we should understand that Vrindavan's potency never decreases. However, the teachings of our acharyas is that Vrindavan can only be accessed by through the devotees. You cannot access, Srila Prabhupada used to say, you cannot buy a ticket to Vrindavan. And so in order to teach this to the world, Krishna arranged it in such a way that Vrindavan went through different historical phases where it was flourishing, and then it became covered just so that a devotee could come and uncover it again and give access to the world, to teach the world that you cannot access Vrindavan just by going to it. You can only access Vrindavan if it's revealed to you by a devotee. And therefore we say in the history of Vrindavan, there are said to be broadly like 3 phases of Vrindavan's history. One is known as the period immediately, well, we can say 4. One is the Krishna period, when Krishna was there. Vrindavan was flourishing. Then Krishna left, and Vrindavan became very uncovered. And then the second period of Vrindavan was known as the Vajranag period. And this is when Krishna's great-grandson went to Vrindavan. He established many, many deities, and he revealed Vrindavan to the world again. Later on, Vrindavan became covered again, and then Mahaprabhu arrived and the Goswamis again revealed Vrindavan. So that's the third period of Vrindavan's history, the Gaudiya period. And then it said that later on, in the 1700s and 1800s, Vrindavan again became covered. And then the Acharyas came, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and specifically Srila Prabhupada, who then invited the whole world back to Vrindavan. And so that is the contemporary period of Vrindavan that we're in at the moment. So yes, Vrindavan is covered and revealed at different times, because Krishna wants to show the world that Vrindavan may be there, but if the mercy of a devotee is not there, you will not be able to see Vrindavan. When Srila Prabhupada went to Vrindavan in 1932, then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was doing a parikrama. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur reached a place called Koshi. If you go right to the north of Vrindavan, then Koshi is on the border. So they got there in the evening, Prabhupada got there, and what happened is that the parikrama party, they were moving on to the next place. And you know what it's like when you're doing a parikrama, you don't want to miss any place, like break the parikrama. That's like, it's considered your vow. So everyone was already traveling to the next place in Vrindavan parikrama, which is known as Sheshashayi. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that evening he announced, he said, I will not go, I will stay here and give a lecture. So Prabhupada came to that place, everyone went to the next place, but Prabhupada said, what I will see, I won't be able to see Vrindavan, but if I hear Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati speak, then through his speech, I'll be able to see Vrindavan. And so Prabhupada stayed, and he heard the lecture of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And then later that year, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur initiated Srila Prabhupada. And as Atulananda Brahmachari was introducing Abhay at that time to Bhaktisiddhanta as his prospective disciple, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati looked at him, and he had only met, saw Srila Prabhupada one or two times, few times. He said, oh him, I know him. I know him. He listens very well. He likes to hear. And that was what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur noted about Srila Prabhupada, that he likes to hear. Because Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, you cannot see the Dham by your eyes. You see the Dham, the holy place, through your ears by listening. And so Vrindavan becomes covered to teach us the lesson that we'll only access it through the saintly persons, and only by hearing the saintly persons.
I had a question. I'm just slightly connected to what you've been mentioning, that some of us have not gotten the chance to physically be in Vrindavan yet, or to experience Vrindavan, but we're very much attracted to cultivating this mood of Vrindavan. What advice would you give us in there now of things that we should start to do, or that we should maintain as a focal point in our spiritual practice in order to get to experience this Vrindavan?
Rupa Goswami writes a book called the Upadesha Amrita. Amrita means the nectar, and Upadesha means instruction. So he writes just 12 verses, right? 12 verses which are considered the nectar of all instructions. But the 8th of those verses, number 8, he says this verse is the essence of all instructions, the Upadesha Sar. So he writes a book and he says this is the nectar of instructions, of all instructions. But within that he says one verse, he says this is the Upadesha Sar, the essence of the nectar of all instructions. And what is that verse that he says? Tannamaru pacharitadi sukirtananu shmityo kramena rasana manasi niyojya tistan vrajay tadanuragi jananukami kalam nayad ikhalamityu padesha saram. He says the essence of all instructions, tannamaru pacharitadi sukirtananu, always engage in hearing about Krishna's name fame, qualities, form, pastimes. Distan Vrajay, in this way, you will always live in Vrindavan. Tadanuragi Jananugami, you will learn what is the mood, what is the bhav, what is the heart of the associates of Krishna by hearing about Vrindavan. And just by following them and hearing about them, you will always be living in Vrindavan. So, one may or may not have gone to Vrindavan, but still one can always absorb themselves in Vrindavan by hearing about Vrindavan. And so that is what we do. You can catch the Vrindavan mood, even if somehow physically you're not able to make it there. Because the Vrindavan mood is not limited to a physical space. And so that is required. That's why Srila Prabhupada gave us the Krishna book, so we could hear about Krishna in Vrindavan. So, yeah, that is what we should do. And if one does that, then when they go to Vrindavan, then everything will have so much more meaning. Because one will already be connected with Krishna and Vrindavan in the heart. You see, one's mind must reach Vrindavan before their body reaches. Because sometimes what happens is our body reaches Vrindavan, but our mind is still in London. And so when Akrura went to Vrindavan, then it said that before he even came into the borders of Vrindavan, his mind was already there. And so if one hasn't physically gone to Vrindavan, then one can understand Krishna is arranging me, giving me time to absorb my mind in Vrindavan, so that when finally COVID disappears and we can go there, then we will be able to fully be present. How much time do we have? 55. 5 minutes left.
35 minutes.
Are you sure? It's so long.
Oh. I think it was.
Okay. We can go on, but if anyone does have to leave, then don't feel pressured to stay.
Can I talk my experience of Vrindavan?
Oh yes, please, of course.
I can share with the people and then if anybody can't understand, we'll talk in Gujarati.
English.
English. I love Gujarati, but anyway, I try English so everybody can understand. Then we came here in 1980. And then my son Ashish, as you know, I was in my 30s. And Ashish was 11, 10, Limpar was 6, and then Ashish went to the ISKCON temple with his cousin brother, first time, in the age of 11. And then when he came home, and in his mind, he decided that one day I will take my parents to Vrindavan. But we don't know about Vrindavan at all. We just read and hear the story of the parents, but we didn't know anything. When he finishes A-levels and then he just opened up. And he said to his father, Papa, I want to talk to you. And then I want to take you to the Vrindavan, you and Mommy. I said, how long do you know? You will go. And then we went to Vrindavan. And then we all four went to the Vrindavan. By the time we went to Delhi, I'm remembering now the reason why it's my experience when I went to Vrindavan, then we went to the Raman Reti. And then guide tell us this is for the place when Krishna was rolling. He was playing with the cows and this and immediately my heart was completely felt. Now we all was rolling in the sand. And the sand was like silver sand. I never ever seen the sand like this before. So this is the sand is here now. From there, I just take a bag of sand and put it in my handbag. And then put it in my temple and give it to some of the friends. And then I think I bath every day, yes. But for water and so this is the bath I take to. This is the Charan Raj of Krishna. My mind was my knowledge, man separ buddhi. So I put it every day here. Please Krishna, buddhi sthir raghan samita. If my buddhi sthir was, sorry my emotion. Then, even today I do this one. So I remember this is my story of my 30s, I mean after 30, 40 years. And then we went to Vrindavan, and then we moved all the places. End of the day, you know, taxi man was waiting and we was in rushing, four of us. Mataji, Prabhuji, please wait, please wait. Take our chas, at least our chas to kitaja. And in the end, we went all there and did chas, beautiful. I never have tried like this one. This is my experience. Then we went to the Madhuban Park. And I remember the old small plants. Daytime, all their plants, and nighttime, they are Radha and Krishna playing with the flute, with Rashmila. And anybody goes in the night, they can get blind, or some people they die. You shouldn't visit that place at the night. So there are so many things I remember from. This is my experience that these little things of Krishna is really wonderful. So I'll give time to other people as well. After that we went so many times, but our heart is there. When people go there, they always leave their heart in Vrindavan. They come back, but their heart is in Vrindavan. So, mercy of Krishna, try everybody to go. Thank you, Prabhu. And thank you,
thank
for
you so much. Somehow we must leave our hearts in Vrindavan, yes. There's that t-shirt, isn't it? I lost my heart in Vrindavan.
And minds as well.
And your?
Minds.
As your minds as well, yes. And I always remember my, our dear friend Janakinath Prabhu. And it was very interesting, for those of you who may not be familiar, Janakinath was one of our monks here. And unfortunately, a few months ago, he passed away from cancer. But I remember what happened last year in 2020, just before the world went into lockdown, is he made a trip to Vrindavan. And I don't know how he did it. he had this kind of... What happened is that he had to get a scan done to check out what was going on. He had colon cancer, it had spread to the liver, to the lungs. And so he needed to get a scan done. So he called me one day and he said, Sutabhai, it will be cheaper if I get the scan done in India, in a hospital in India. I said, I never heard of that. Someone flies all the way to India just to get a scan done. He said, no, trust me, it will be cheaper. Anyway, in January, I think it was, he took a flight out to India, supposedly to get a scan done, but actually he was doing a scam. And I don't even think he got the scan done. He got to India and he just took a taxi and he went to Vrindavan. And he spent 2 weeks in Vrindavan, and we spoke when he was in Vrindavan. And I could see that Krishna was just bringing him close and just establishing that connection. And when he came back from Vrindavan, he was a changed person. Because now, all he was thinking about was Krishna in Vrindavan. And somehow or other, when he came back, at that point, the medical situation was such that it was clear there was no way back. So it was just a countdown. But somehow or other, he had made that trip to Vrindavan and he had fixed his North Star, that Vrindavan, that's the place that I want to reach. And so what we did in the subsequent 2 years after that, or 18 months, whatever it was, every week we would meet and we would speak only about Vrindavan. And we would do a mental parikrama of Vrindavan. And that's all he was focusing on. And then he moved here at the manor and he had all the deities of Vrindavan in front of him. And like that, he had installed his consciousness there in Vrindavan. So it was a very beautiful teaching and a very beautiful example of how Krishna comes to this world. He manifests all his pastimes in the holy place. And anyone who goes to that place and connects with that place, it becomes a way in which to install Krishna within your heart and then carry Krishna wherever you go and whatever happens to you. And in that way to remain Krishna conscious. So yes, so thank you for sharing that. And we pray that we will lose our hearts in Vrindavan. Vrindavan is a place of crying for Krishna. And the fact of the world is that all of us will cry for something. Madhvacharya, he says that if you add up all of the tears that the conditioned souls have shed over lifetimes for material things, those tears will be enough to fill oceans. We're going to cry for so many material things. So instead, if we learn to cry for Krishna, if we learn to cry in desperation to be connected back to the eternal realm where we belong, then ultimately when we enter that realm, we'll continue to cry, but we'll cry in great joy, tears of joy. So we have three options really. Cry for material things, cry for being connected to Krishna, and when you're ultimately a perfected siddha, perfected soul, then cry for Krishna out of transcendental joy like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is. And so Vrindavan is really a place which helps us to develop that desperation and that longing. So thank you for sharing that. Okay, maybe I'll say a few more things about Radha Damodar and then maybe we'll end with a kirtan. So Radha Damodar, I mean, there's so much more that we could talk about. But this is another reason why Radha Damodar is so special. Because in Radha Damodar, you find these samadhis. Dhi means consciousness and sama means complete. So samadhi means a complete trance of consciousness. And when a perfected soul leaves this world, then their body is kept within a samadhi, a tomb. Because it's said that they have achieved a level of spiritual perfection, consciousness, which means that their body is no longer material, it's completely spiritualized. And therefore, by preserving the body in that place, it's said that anyone who goes there can still associate with those personalities. So if you go to Radha Damodar temple today, then you'll find on Srila Prabhupada's desk, there is there's a letter there that they always keep. And I'll just read that letter out to you. This letter is always on Prabhupada's desk. And Prabhupada writes, "Those who stay here in Radha Damodar temple will realize that all these great souls, Rupa Goswami, Jiva Goswami, Krishnadas Kaviraj, Bhugarbha Goswami, all of these saints are still living here. And if one is actually advancing in the spiritual field, they can still take instructions from all the saints who are living there. It is up to the individual how he realizes this by devotional service. By staying there, you must realize how pure the environment is. The environment itself gives a high taste of consciousness. Radha Damodar is still there. The great saints, they're still there. There cannot be any other better place to live than Radha Damodar. The corner at Radha Damodar temple is just like the hub of the wheel of the spiritual world. It is the center. So Srila Prabhupada said, when you go to these places, then the saints are actually still there. So Srila Prabhupada, he took sannyas on the 17th of September 1959. And Srila Prabhupada, when he took sannyas, he moved into his rooms at Radha Damodar temple. And one of the reasons why Srila Prabhupada moved to the Radha Damodar temple is because he wanted to avail of the association of the saints who are still living there. So here you see these two dwellings. This is known as the Samadhi and the Bhajan Kutir of Rupa Goswami. The Bhajan Kutir means the place which honors where that saint was doing their spiritual practice. And the Samadhi means the place where their body has been encased. And so in this courtyard is a profound spiritual energy. And Srila Prabhupada would every day come into this courtyard and he would circumambulate these samadhis. One of the servitors at the Radha Damodar temple recalls that one night he woke up at 1 o'clock in the morning and he looked over into the courtyard and he saw Srila Prabhupada there with a broom. And Srila Prabhupada was sweeping in front of the Samadhi of Rupa Goswami and he was praying that my spiritual master has given me a mission to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, but I don't know how I'm going to do it. I'm simply praying for your empowerment that it be made possible. And he said he was just watching and Srila Prabhupada was fervently, desperately praying in this way to Rupa Goswami to achieve the empowerment. So Radha Damodar temple is very, very profound because this is where all the saints are still living. And so if one goes into Radha Damodar temple, then there are the samadhis of over 100 different saints who lived and worshipped Krishna in Vrindavan. There's the samadhi, obviously, of Rupa Goswami. There's also the samadhi of Jiva Goswami. There's also the samadhi of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, who wrote the Chaitanya Charitamrita. There's also the Pushpa Samadhi of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Many, many great eminent personalities are residing there. This is the samadhi of Jiva Goswami. And this is Srila Prabhupada, who took his residence. Here you see Prabhupada had two rooms, one on this side and one on this side. On this side, Prabhupada had a kitchen, and on this side was Prabhupada's study, where he would live and he would stay and he would read. So whenever we go to Vrindavan, we make it a point to visit these places. I was earlier today, I was reading just an excerpt from my journal while I was at the Radha Damodar. Can I read it for you? So every year I go to Vrindavan, I try to, Krishna allows. And Radha Damodar temple is a place where I try to spend a lot of time. So this was from quite some years back, but this is what I wrote on this occasion. Went to Radha Damodar temple today to try and get some mercy. As soon as I got into Srila Prabhupada's rooms, I saw some rats and it unsettled me somewhat. I remember this time I went into Prabhupada's rooms and I sat down and I was like, okay, here, very spiritual. And then like these three or four rats just like ran right across the room. And it reminded me actually, because in Prabhupada's biography, it talks about how there would be constantly rats running through the ward. I mean, India means it's... So it's a bit disconcerting. But then I just realized, my God, Prabhupada was living in such a simple place. He was literally living in such a humble dwelling. Anyway, carry on. As soon as I got into Srila Prabhupada was living so simply in this remote and disconnected place, so far from the outer materialistic world. Yet from this small room in the Radha Damodar temple, Srila Prabhupada masterminded a worldwide movement. Srila Prabhupada was crying out at the Radha Damodar temple, "How will I fulfill the order of my spiritual master? When will I be able to cry out like that, ready to take all the discomforts to try and reach out and help other people?" When we do something uncomfortable for Krishna, but do it on the order of the great spiritual authorities who are constantly thinking of how to uplift the world, something very deep and profound happens in our relationship with Guru and Gauranga. O Krishna, will I ever overcome the need for name, fame, recognition and respect? Every year I come here and try and pray, expecting that some change of heart will come. But I guess the time I am away, I'm still feeding all of these aspirations for material things. Srila Prabhupada, here at Radha Damodar, I'm praying to you. Help me to become genuine. Help me to become authentic. Help me to really live my aspirations. Help me to follow in the footsteps of the great saints and do something to assist Srila Prabhupada. If only I could develop some purity and sincerity, maybe I would be able to do something useful with my life. Please help me to overcome my pride, my need for attention, acknowledgement, appreciation. Help me to connect with you so that I can experience the bliss that comes from service. Help me to become absorbed in the eternal reality so I can forget this world and all the false dreams that go with it. So it's very... So Radha Damodar Temple is a real a place of deep meditation. These are some of the images of Srila Prabhupada in the 70s when he took the devotees to Radha Damodar Temple. In the courtyard of the Radha Damodar Temple, Srila Prabhupada was giving lectures on the nectar of devotion, the perhaps magnum opus of Rupa Goswami. And this is Srila Prabhupada in his kitchen where he would cook for Radha Damodar and then take that prasad. And outside of his window, he would directly see the samadhi of Rupa Goswami. And it's said that Prabhupada's constant meditation was on leaving Vrindavan and ultimately sharing Krishna consciousness all over the world. And so here, Srila Prabhupada, in his other room, he would meet his great associates, he would study, he would write Srimad Bhagavatam. This personality who you see next to Srila Prabhupada is another great pure devotee of Krishna. His name is Akinchan Krishnadas Babaji. And it's said that nothing ever came out of his mouth except the holy name of Krishna. If you asked him a question, he would just chuckle and just say, Hare Krishna. And you can read his biography. There's a biography which has been written by him recently. It's called Divine Intoxication. And so, and if you go onto the internet, you can also hear his kirtan. One devotee said he went up to Akinchan Krishnadas Babaji and he just felt he had to hug him. So he went up to him and he hugged him and he said, "When I put my ear by his heart, I heard the holy name." So he was absorbed. So Srila Prabhupada had so much love for all of these saints of Vrindavan. They would come and see him. And this is Srila Prabhupada's room when he was living there. It was so simple. It was so basic. It was just this remote place in Vrindavan. But Prabhupada was so happy there. One time Prabhupada saw these pictures of Radha Damodar and he began to smile. And one devotee looked at him and said, "Prabhupada, why are you smiling?" And he said, "I'm looking at the pictures of Radha Damodar temple." It was too much ecstatic. Prabhupada said it was too much ecstatic. So Prabhupada was just living there simply. But because he was so absorbed in Krishna, because he was so much feeling the presence of Rupa Goswami, and because he was being invested with so much empowerment to affect the world, he was so content and happy there. And so Srila Prabhupada spent many, many years there. He actually spent 6 years in Radha Damodar temple. So next time you go to Vrindavan, don't forget to go to the hub of the wheel of the entire spiritual creation. Take a day, take the Bhagavatam with you, and just go and sit in Radha Damodar temple. Be careful, there might be some rats there. But just sit there and just absorb yourself. And one time I went there in the morning to Radha Damodar temple, and I was trying to get into Srila Prabhupada's rooms, but somehow the rooms were locked. So I thought, okay, I'll just circumambulate the temple and then eventually someone will open it. So I was circumambulating the temple, walking through all the samadhis. 1 hour passed, 2 hours passed, 3 hours passed, 6 hours passed, 10 hours passed, and no one came. But I just continued circumambulating Radha Damodar temple. And I came out and I almost just felt divinely intoxicated. I wasn't just dizzy because I was going back. But it was so purifying. It was just so purifying, the energy of Radha Damodar temple, just to be there. Because Srila Prabhupada said the saints are living there even today, and one who has the vision will be able to fully access their association. So these are some humble thoughts that I wanted to share with you. There were many places we could have gone today in Vrindavan, but I thought Radha Damodar temple was an important place to remember. And I hope that we all manage to inspire our hearts in Vrindavan consciousness as we remember this very beautiful place which was so dear to Srila Prabhupada. Radha Damodar ki, Radha Damodar temple ki, Shri Prabhupada ki, all the Goswamis ki, Vrindavan dham ki, Jai Nitai Gaur Premanande. Okay, it's 9:20. I guess we can just there's some questions. Okay.
I'm very inspired the way Srila Prabhupada was living, the simple living, high thinking. And I just feel in this material world today, the less we have, the more closer we can get to Krishna. Because when you have too much material around you, then you are so engrossed in those material things that you just don't find time to get to do what is actually required.
Yeah, simple life is beautiful life.
And happier life as well.
One time I was walking around Govardhan. I was doing Govardhan Parikrama. And I had nothing with me. I only, whatever dhoti I was wearing. I didn't even have a phone. I didn't have any keys. I didn't have any money. I just had my bead bag. And I just got this very strong sense of complete liberation. I just felt so free. And it was such a beautiful feeling. It was so like, I didn't have any shoes on. It was nothing. I had just hardly anything. And I had this strong realization of how when we free our life from material attachment, it just becomes so light and it becomes so beautiful. And I remember on that parikrama, I remember actually very vividly. For those of you that know Govardhan, you go through Govindakund and then you go through the tip of Govardhan and then you come round and then there's a village called Jatipur. So Jatipur is a very amazing place. This is where the great Saint Madhavendra Puri was. Anyway, so I was walking in that place and that's a very secluded part of Govardhan and very picturesque part of Govardhan. And you can see Govardhan, you can go very close. Anyway, I was walking there and then one Baba who was living there, he came to me. And so he said, what are you doing? So I said, I'm from London, I've come to get some mercy, give me your blessings. And then we were talking and I said, I'm going back to London in 2 days. And so he gave me the dirtiest London, why are you going back to London? You're in Govardhan, you're in Vrindavan, why would you go back to London? So I was explaining to him, no, I got to go there, I got duties, I got other things I have to do. And then he just looked at me and he said, just stay here. And he pointed in the direction of an ashram. And said, you can do it. You can do it. Just disappear off the face of the earth. Just go off the grid. And just dedicate your life and live at the foothills of Govardhan. What more do you want? It's perfection. And for a moment, I thought, maybe I should just do it. And then I thought, I will never see Vrindavan like that. Maybe I will stay at Govardhan. But will I ever see Govardhan? Will I ever see Krishna? For that I need to come to Vrindavan with a purified heart. For that I need to enter Vrindavan without any material desires in my consciousness. And in order to purify myself, I have to serve, I have to share with others, and I have to extend myself selflessly to reciprocate with Srila Prabhupada who extended himself so selflessly. And so I looked at the Baba and I said, pray for me one day, but now is not the right time. And so then I walked on. But still, what it left me with is the beauty of simplicity. That there is a sense in which we overcomplicate life so much. Complicated lifestyle, complicated relationships, complicated speech, complicated mind. Vrindavan is for the simple, the childlike souls. And so, yes, to simplify life is a very beautiful thing.
So do you think that should be the final destination for all of us?
Yes, Vrindavan is ultimately the place where we all want to go. But remember, Vrindavan is manifesting in many, many different ways. And so for service, and if it is the desire of Krishna to be somewhere else separate from the spiritual Vrindavan or the earthly Vrindavan, then by following the wishes of Krishna, then we'll still be living in Vrindavan. Vrindavan is known as Vraja, and the word Vraja means to move. And it means that the residents of Vrindavan, they're always moving with Krishna. They're moving with Krishna's desires. They're moving with Krishna's will. They're moving with Krishna's plan. They're moving with Krishna's arrangements. And in that way, they're always living in Vrindavan because they're always moving with Krishna. So yes, our cherished destination is Vrindavan. But to really become Brajabasis, it means we have to be ready to move with Krishna at every step of life. And so that is what we're trying to do. Hare Krishna. Okay, last question.
Was Vrindavan on the earthly realm manifested in a certain way? I could be wrong, but is there a pastime where Krishna he brought to Vrindavan Govardhan and Yamuna and the dust through Radharani's request? So prior to this time, was Vrindavan actually on the earthly realm? Or how did it come about?
Yeah, there are many stories behind how Govardhan came. Those are very, very beautiful stories, long stories as well. But suffice it to say that Vrindavan is always carrying the potency of Vrindavan. When Krishna appears, so Vrindavan was powerful even before Krishna appeared. You find that, for example, Dhruva Maharaj in the Satya Yuga, he went to Madhuvan. In Vrindavan, you can go to that place today, before Krishna appeared. And he did his austerities in Madhuvan, at Dhruva Teel. So Vrindavan was always powerful, Vrindavan was always manifest. But at certain points in time, the different aspects of Vrindavan came in preparation for Krishna to appear in the world. And then Krishna appeared in the world. And then after that time, we talked about the history of Vrindavan and how it became covered and not. So the dhams are sometimes covered, sometimes open, sometimes covered, sometimes open. But they're always powerful. Like, we see the Yamuna and it externally is polluted now. But we understand that the Yamuna is always purified on a spiritual level. We go to Vrindavan today and sometimes it's chaotic, it's polluted, but it's always spiritual. And so Vrindavan was always spiritual. It's a Chintamani Dham. It's the like a touchstone. But it's just that it manifests and covers according to situations. Yeah. Okay, so we'll finish there and we'll end with a short kirtan. I'm sure some of you is late, so I'm sure many of you may need to also go. So if you can stay, that will be nice. If you need to continue on, then please do. I don't know if there's some prasad, mahaprasadam outside. Thank you so much for coming this evening, and thank you for being part of the Vrindavan Parikrama. Remember, it's like a spider weaving its web. So this round of Kartik Parikrama has strengthened that web of attachment to Krishna. Specifically like to thank all the devotees, Manju, Renu, Sankirtan Priya, Bhupendra, Arinda, all the whole team, I'm sure I'm missing out names, for all their arrangements in bringing Vrindavan in this form to Bhaktivedanta Mana and organizing all these programs. It's very wonderful. By their mercy, we were able to connect with Vrindavan in a little bit of a deeper way. So thank you so much. And we thank Srila Prabhupada, ultimately, who is the one, the ambassador of Vrindavan, who made it open the doors to this whole other reality, the only reality, which is our eternal home. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Sri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai, Sri Prabhupada Ki Jai, Hare Krishna.